Good evening, everybody. For those who may have come into the Zoom room and left because I wasn't on time, I apologize. Let me just explain. It is something that maybe for those who are actively following us, maybe some people want to vote on this. I give this shiur live at the White Shul, and it's broadcast live by Zoom. Now, I give it at the White Shul with the understanding that some people will be attending in the flesh, like in prehistoric, pre-COVID times. Sadly, that has not come to pass, and more times than not, more than half the times, I was only broadcasting over Zoom, but I still have to be in the White Shul in case someone comes in person. This evening that worked against us because I lost my car keys. That's right, I lost my car keys and had to wait for my wife to come home so I could use her car to get here. And I got here and it's only by Zoom and, and there was no one here in person to turn up for. So we really have to consider whether this should be on Zoom only, and then it could always start on time because I could always broadcast from my house. Something for you guys to consider and we should vote on. But I just want to share with you, it reminds me of a joke I heard when I was a very little boy that, there was this Rebbe that would never receive visitors Shabbos afternoon. Shabbos afternoon, after the meal until Mincha time, that was his private time. But a man as holy as he wasn't going to spend all that time sleeping. He used to pace up and down in his library thinking holy thoughts, but he had an interesting custom. He was paced up and down in his undergarments and his shtreimel. So he was wearing a shtreimel and his undergarments, but of course no one knew about this weird habit because no one used to ever come over. Okay? But after decades of this, someone, some chassid accidentally, forgot the protocols and bust in and saw the Rebbe in his underwear and his shtreimel. And the chassid runs out, of course, deeply embarrassed that he caught the Rebbe in such an embarrassing situation. And later on in the week, he musters up the courage to apologize to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe good-naturedly said, okay, mistakes happen, it's okay. So he says, okay, Rebbe, may I ask, it'll be our secret, but what's with the underwear? He says, listen, Shabbos afternoon is private time. No one ever comes over, so why shouldn't I be comfortable? So I pace up and down in my undergarments to be in full comfort because no one comes over anyway. So why the shtreimel, Rebbe? Because someone might come over. Okay. I felt like this, I was reminded of this joke, which is not that good, but I was reminded that, I had to come to the White Shul in case someone does come in person. We seriously have to evaluate whether we're going to continue this practice because like on a night, tonight, it was extremely inconvenient. And for what? So something to discuss. I apologize for those who follow this by recording only, that this seemed like a digression, but this recording also goes out to those who follow it by Zoom, who sometimes are not able to make it. So it's something to raise for our next meeting on Thursday. Okay, after this long digression, I will make sure to give you a session that was well worth the wait. We are finally, getting into some major core issues that tonight, over the next two sessions, we will discuss these bigger core issues generally, and then we're going to start getting into particulars. Now, you might ask, what's more core than the stuff that we've been discussing until now? Now we're beginning to get into the secret of how the neshama and guf actually fit together. And that's where we're going to explain it, you know, broadly over the next two sessions. And we're going to learn a Zohar together that I shared with you. For those who are signed up to receive the source sheets ahead of time, the major Zohar, which is the major source about the relationship, you know, seemingly love-hate relationship, dysfunctional relationship, however you want to refer to it, that the neshama has, you know, like a very key piece of material on this is this Zohar. It's a part of the Zohar. It's called the Medrash HaNe'elam in Parshas Chaye Sarah. All right. We have discussed that, on the one hand, the body and soul are opposites, right? And seemingly death is the most natural thing for them because they don't naturally belong together. And yet the neshama was created to inhabit a body, right? And of course, the body gets tremendous benefits from the neshama. And the biggest sign that things are not as they seem is from the end of time. You know, sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila, you know from the last step of the process what was always intended. The last in action is the first in thought. That is the goal. And the ultimate goal is tchiyas ha'mesim, that after the body and soul are rid of each other, after having been forced to work together, right, they get back together. And it is the conventional mainstream understanding, most Rishonim, and this is the accepted view of the Mekubalim, that, you know, they will stay together forever. That even Olam Haba that comes after the resurrection, the body will go to that next world together with the neshama. The body will be there, and the question is, how is that going to work? Yeah, and we're going to explain the Ramchal's model, which actually we had alluded to. We had mentioned once the 10 millennia model of the Ramchal and the Machlokas, the Rambam, and the others. So now going into the main... So even like the Rambam, everyone agrees that there's Tchias HaMeisim, which is an amazing thing. After they were rid of each other, you put them back together. But let alone like the most Rishonim and the Mekubalim, not like the Rambam, the body goes to Olam Haba, even though the body will, of course, be elevated to be fitting for Olam Haba, as we will explain. So these... They're opposites. We learned this medrash that the neshama tries to leave every day, even in a regular Jew. You know, it tries to, you know, the Rebbe Shem has to intervene and convince it to stay by showing, you know, what could be accomplished in this world, right? But we learned that by the Rasha, Rishoyim B'chayim Kruim Mesim, that the Rambam took that very literally. You know, the Rasha is biologically alive, but spiritually dead. His neshama wants nothing to do with his body. That his body and his neshama don't get along. But what we're going to learn in this Zohar that we're going to learn together, you know, is that there's the opposite. You know, this Zohar actually concentrates on, you know, the opposite side of it, of tzaddikim b'misasam kruyim chayim. Tzaddikim, even in their death, are called alive. Showing that the neshama and guf are bonded to each other, and even in death, in a certain way, they do not fully part. And that's what we're going to learn in this Zohar together, right? The tzaddikim b'misasam kruyim chayim. So what does this sound like? They're opposites. We learned the neshama created with haras upon him, the guf with hester upon him. Opposites, but yet they complement each other, like the coin, we said, and the press. That, you know, they're opposites. One is the press, one is the coin. One is above, the press is above, like the neshama is heavenly, above the body, and the coin that's pressed below. But the press and the coin fit into each other like pieces of a puzzle, you know, because what's indented in the coin is raised on the press, and what's indented in the press is raised on the coin, that they just fit together perfectly, you know? You know, and we showed that that's the relationship between the body and the soul. You know, what does this sound like? What does this sound like? You know, they can't live with each other, they can't live without each other. Right? The relationship is either heaven or hell. Marriage. marriage, right? And it's not that we say that about marriage because we're cynical. We are cynical, and we are not good at shalom bias, but it happens to be a eternal truth, right? That when Hashem made, you know, Chava for Adam, said, Eselo Ezer Kenegdo, a help against him. Everyone knows the Chazal, Zocha Ezer, Lo Zocha Kenegdo. If a man is virtuous, she will be his helpmate. And if not, she will be his opposition. And everyone knows another Chazal, Zochu Shechina Shruya Beinem, if they merit, the divine presence rests between them. Lo Zochu Eshachal, if not, they're consumed by fire. That marriage can either be heaven or hell, you know, divine blessing or hellfire, right? You know, working together or be your biggest, you know, opposition, right? That was foretold since the beginning of time. So, you know, we may be bad at marriage, right? But marriage was never meant to be easy for anybody, right? At least we could console ourselves with that, right? So the body and soul, you know, have a marriage type of relationship, right? Does it sound? So now we're going to show, and this is what the topic of this Zohar is, right, is that this is not some loose metaphor. They are actually perfectly parallel concepts, right? We said at the very, very beginning of this series, right, in the very first session that we were together, we pointed out two things that were peculiar about the creation of Adam, right? What we've been focusing on, you know, thus far in the series, that his body and soul are two separate beings. He's a compound, right? He is fused out of two separate beings, and like we've learned most recently, these two separate beings come from two different types of energies that Hashem emanates. They're all equally from Hashem, right? But one is called Haraspanim, one is called Hesterpanim. One gives us, you know, purity and spirituality, the other one gives us physicality, and if it's intensified, it opens up the possibility for all the temptations of the flesh and the facilitates the possibility of the existence of evil if that concealment is intensified too much. So, and that's where the body comes from. The body comes from this, you know, this mode of conduct that could actually give space for evil, albeit on a temporary basis, but nonetheless. Whereas the neshama comes from the mode of conduct that dispels or darkness and just moves everything to tikkun and purity. Right? So we noted that, and we noted something else. You know, all the other life forms, you know, emerge from the earth, or the fish that emerge from the water, you know, they came together with their mates. At the moment of creation, they, Zohar and the Keva came out together instantly. So when the sheep came out of the ground on the sixth day of creation, or the fish sprouted, you know, popped out of the waters. And the Chazal tell us the Ophos were Nivra min Arakak. They're not exactly water, they're not exactly dry land, you know. They were Nivra for like, you know, like swamp, but not the Washington DC swamp, you know. Birds are not that bad. You know, we're not talking about from, you know, the physical swamp, not the dirty political one. All right, they say come from the Rakak, which I understand is to be translated like a swamp or a puddle. All right, but wherever they emerge from on the fifth and sixth day of creation, the pasuk says openly, man, you know, the Zohar and the Keva, they came out together instantly at the same time, right? Adam, not that way, right? The first Aliyah in Bereishis says it in short form. Hashem created Adam, Zohar, and the Keva, but we find that when the Torah goes back to review the whole thing, that it all happened on the same day, but it didn't happen at the same time. Right? That first Adam was created, and Hashem says, Lo tov heyosa Adam levado, right? Eselo ezer kenegdo, and the woman was created separately, right? Created out of man's body. And that's also another thing to look at. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did surgery, literally, right? You know, it was surgery. Put him asleep, cut something off. Machlokas exactly, you know, different aspects. Was it, well, he had a tail that was cut off, he took out a rib, he cut off a whole side. We have all the different shittas in the Medrash, which each one alludes to a different philosophical idea. And then he makes the woman, and which is interesting. It was, she was made out of man's body. You know, and Adam really chemical, so, but that's why you find it interesting to determine halacha ishto ke gufo, a man's wife is like his body, because you know, she was actually made out of a piece of his body. And we're going to say, and what does that mean about the man to the woman by contrast? She's like an extension of his body. What is he an extension of to her? And we're going to discuss that in a general way tonight. And then next week, not next week, I mean next Thursday, Blinetta will read it inside in the Zohar. But don't you see that man, just like he himself was created in two separate phases, two separate components, all on the same day, but nonetheless, you know, Hashem first made his body, and as we learned in a few sources, you know, it seems that the body was fully animate. You know, he was biochemically alive, and then the neshama came in, right? And the same thing happened. You know, and again, the process repeated itself. That there was just Adam alone first, right? And then he was put to sleep to make Chava, and as opposed to all the other life forms that procreate, right? That them and their mate created at the same time. What do we learn from that? Right? It's eerily, you know, parallel to body and soul. Right? But that's the point, really, that the relationship between man and wife, you know, and how it's supposed to be sealed with kiddushin, with marriage, which is called kedusha, right? And that's supposed to be what bonds them to each other, right? They have a body-soul relationship, you know, and the good marriage is parallel to the successful body-soul relationship. The bad marriage is perfectly parallel to the bad body and soul relationship. And that's, yeah, and it's an amazing thing when you call your wife your partner in life. You know, there's no, this is not just like an expression, it's true. The challenges that there are in marriage are, you know, is the macro of the challenges that are in the micro, the internal struggles between man's body and man's soul, are perfectly parallel, you know, to the struggle to make it work with your mate. They are, we will show. Now, of course, it's talking about it in an ideal world. You know, we don't live in an ideal world. You know, we have, we're influenced by society, and we have all types of, pressures and things like that, and also maybe our conception of what is called the good life or what we want out of marriage has been warped by terrible misinformation or bad education, right? We're talking about in a pure world, albeit, you know, a physical world that, you know, has yet to be elevated, as it will be when we merit the coming of Mashiach, and then even more when we merit the resurrection, in a pure world that is only as messed up as the way Hashem left it, and we don't screw it up even more, right? In God's world, where He just left a certain obstacle course for us to negotiate, and we don't screw it up and make it worse. Right? So in the ideal world, you know, which is not the most optimal world, that's at the end of the 6,000, but in God's world that we haven't tainted, but He still left some challenge for us, I could show you, and that's what we're going to demonstrate, that there's natural challenges of harmonizing body and soul. Perfectly parallel to that are the challenges of trying to attain harmony between man and wife. Right, and this is the amazing thing, right? You know, to understand why the Zohar decided to discuss this in Parshas Chaye Sara, right? Something about amazing thing about Chaye Sara, right? First, recorded eulogy and honorable burial. Right? It's an amazing thing. People were living and dying for 20 generations, 2,000 years of world history, really, right? And it's never discussed, you know, we even had tzaddikim that walked the face of the earth, you know, like Noach, Shem, Mesushelach. No account of, and then when he died, they said a hesped, and they buried him in such and such a place. Remains a mystery. Torah doesn't discuss it. It just says he lived and he died. This is how long he lived. No details about his burial, right? Eulogy, burial. That only starts from Avram and Sarah. And then, it says when Yitzchak died, Yaakov and Esav buried him. And then when Yaakov died, how they did the whole thing and ceremony, and then they did a whole thing, until they brought him back to burial, Maros Machpelah, and the death of Moshe, It's interesting. But the first 20 generations, nothing. Just mention, and he just lived so long, and that's where it ends. But here's another thing. Until Avram and Sarah, there's no account of married life. There's a little bit by Adam, only a few psukim. How they were in the Garden of Eden before they got into trouble with the snake. And then it just says they got back together again 130 years later and had Chase, and that's it. And the rest, after that, not a mention of married life. Oh yeah, one exception, that there was one of the descendants of Cain had two wives, Ada and Sila, and he confessed to them that he accidentally killed Cain. Right? But that's it, right? No real, account of married life. Whereas, when the Avos come, Avram and Sarah, the dialogue, their disagreements about, what to do with Yishmael, and then from there onwards, that's the new trend, right? So we have dialogues between Yitzhak and Rivka about, Yaakov, what their relationship was, and Yaakov, he should not marry from the Benos Chet. They talk, there's discussions, their ideas, their disagreements, and their disagreements, Rivka never liked her own son Esav that much, but Yitzhak did, it's interesting. Then Yaakov, Rachel, Leah, full of, the dialogues and the discussions and the agreements and the disagreements, right? But not for the first 20 generations of world history. Why is that? Right? It changes by the Avos, starting with Avram and Sarah, right? So Parshas Chayei Sarah, first account of, so Avram and Sarah were the first account of married life, but interestingly enough, we only discuss them after they've been chosen and sent to Israel. We don't know about how they hooked up, we don't know anything about their adolescence or their earlier years together. Yeah. Right. And of course, with Yitzhak and Rivka, at that point, we know them from their childhood straight through. We see how things about Yitzhak when he was young, things about Rivka when he was young, and how they hook up. And, Yaakov, Esav, Rachel, Leah also. So it's interesting, it starts with Avram and Sarah, and it starts in the middle after as where they were chosen. And before that, they were like everyone else. We didn't care much about their married life. Never even discussed the women at all, Kimat, until Sarah. And then we start discussing the women of the Bible, whether it's the Emos, Yocheved, right, Miriam, et cetera, et cetera. Right, what changed? So an amazing thing, we discuss Adam and Chava a little bit, and then it all stops after Chet Eitz Hadas. They did the crime, and so Hashem, takes them to task, and that's it. After Adam is thrown out of Gan Eden, we just start talking about Cain and Hevel. We stop talking about Adam and Eve, we just see later on, that we just, the raw fact that he got back together with her and had Chase. And where Chazal teach us, 130 years passed, right? But before that, that was the whole talk. Hashem made Chava, and Adam instructed Chava, and the whole. But, this trend of the 20 generations of silence about the women in general, And even about the men, their married life is not an issue. Silence about, you know, eulogy and honorable burial, right? That all happens right after Chet Eitz Hadas. So it's an amazing thing, right? You know, Chet Eitz Hadas, and we're gonna discuss this also in this week's video. Chet Eitz Hadas, you know, it took a terrible toll on, the neshama suffered from it also, the cosmos suffered, but if there's something that suffered the most, it's the body. The body and the physical reality. Man's body became mortal and tainted, you know, with internal Yetzirah. The Yetzirah used to be external in the form of the snake. You know, became mortal, became, you know, because man was designed to live forever, if not for the sin of the Eitz Hadas, right? The body was able to be synthesized with the soul if Adam would have just kept the faith a little bit longer. The body suffered, and also physical reality. Arura adama ba'avurecha, the ground is accursed. Life, physical life became hard, and making a living became hard, all because of Chet Eitz Hadas. So here, and what happened, you know, we know that Adam and Chava had, as a result of the Chet Eitz Hadas, they had a shown bias problem. They split for 130 years, right? You know, and the two go in perfect parallel. Don't you understand? The Chet Eitz Hadas tainted the body. And man and wife have a body and soul relationship. It's just like the body, you know, suffered greatly, you know, was, you know, greatly damaged. And if it was ever hard to harmonize the body and soul before the Eitz Hadas, it became damn near impossible afterwards. Because now no matter how, listen to me, no matter how righteous a person is, even the most righteous has to die. It is impossible this time around to perfectly harmonize them, no matter how hard you try. You just build up the potential for the harmony that emerges by Tchias HaMeisim. But that's how tainted it is. It's impossible to get it right first time around. You can only build up the potential to get it to merit resurrection. That's how tainted it is, right? But of course, at least we could try to break through to be worthy of resurrection, right? Be worthy of Olam Haba, which is supposed to be the world of the harmony that comes after the resurrection, you know, the further world of harmony, right? But the sin of Adam made it, you know, very darn near impossible for in general, and particularly for all those who lived before Avram Avinu, that begins the legacy of the Jewish people, that is the people that are repairing the sin of Adam. So maybe I should have said this earlier in tonight's session, and that is to point out an amazing thing, right, about the words Ish and Isha, things that people know, but you know, nonetheless, it's much more powerful in light of the ideas that we've put forth. The Gemara says in Menachos Daf Chaf Tes Amud Beis that Ki Baka Hashem, talking with the name Ka Hashem, fashioned worlds, and the Gemara goes on explaining with the letter Yud Hashem fashioned the higher world, and with the letter He He fashioned this world, right? For reasons that the Gemara say of why it's so apropos, you know. But who has the letter Yud in his name? Ish, man. He has the Yud. He is like the neshama. And Isha, she has the hay from which the lower world's created. And that's why Ishto Kegufo, if she is like his body, then he, by contrast, is like her neshama. That is how the integrated unit fits together. So now the Gemara, Chazal say, I think it's a ton of the Baal Yo, that says, Isha Kshera Osa Ratzon Bala. The good woman, the refined woman does the will of her husband. She does what he wills. That's the relationship between body and soul. The neshama is supposed to provide the direction, the will, but the neshama doesn't have a body. The body does the mitzvahs. The neshama can't do the mitzvahs. That's why it had to go into a body. So the neshama wants and the body does. That's the relationship between that the tzaddik, his body and soul, has, and that's what it says, Ishak Sheros Ratzon Bala. He is like the soul, she is like the body in the integrated unit. In the integrated unit. Of course, he has his own body and she has her own soul. But in the macro of the two fitting together, he is like the neshama, she's like the guf. And that's the secret. She was created as an extension of his own body. Right? Ishto ki gufo, and he by conscious is like her neshama in the integrated unit. He's the yud, she's the hey. Right? But of course, that's why they need the divine presence that's formed with these two letters coming together, a divine name. But if they are not meritorious, you know, if they are not virtuous, so the yud and the hey leave their names, right? And they're just left with Eish, and Eish Ochaltam, they are consumed by fire. So when Adam made a schism between his body and soul, that very same schism expressed itself in his shalom bias, or rather the lack thereof. Right? You know, so just like he made a problem internally for himself, he made himself mortal, he made a wedge between the body and soul, that wedge expressed itself in his marriage. And they split for 130 years until they found a way forward, and then they had Chase, who replaced Hevel, and you know, and Chase is the bloodline that gave us the tzaddikim, like Chanoch, you know, Mesu Shelach, Lemech, Noach, right? But of course that restoration wasn't complete. So now when the body was defiled, you know, they ate from the tree, all of a sudden they're embarrassed of their bodies, so they cover up in clothes. And we discussed this in last week's video drasha on Guf and Neshama and the Parsha. So they immediately put up clothes because they're embarrassed of the body, embarrassed of what the body became, right? As opposed to when the body was holy by comparison to what it is like today, you know, they walked around naked. There was v'loyis posha, there was nothing to be ashamed of, right? So when the body became mortal, so when a person died, you know, the body's like an old piece of machinery. You just throw it out. Right? So they always were in the habit of burying it because Hashem says, Ki ofrat ha'avos, you know, put the body back. It was made from dust, it should go back to dust. It was made from dirt, it should go back to dirt. So it was probably always customary to bury the body. Right? But it was not like final respects. It's a piece of garbage, you know, it's tainted. It's like, you know, you give final respects to your blender when it stops working, your car, you know. You just put it where the law demands it needs to be deposited, right? Okay, and that's it. The body was regarded as totally unholy. And parallel to mankind, viewing the body as something totally unholy, right? And it's just a piece of machinery that gets thrown out when it's been used up. They also didn't value marriage. You know, you just hook up with a woman to, you know, release your passions and to propagate the species. They didn't view it as anything holy. They didn't view it as some form of cosmic unity of holiness, holy matrimony. They didn't look at it that way. Just like they didn't look at the body as anything holy that deserves final respects. So also they didn't look at marriage as anything holy. It's purely pragmatic. And if they, you know, they were careful not to commit adultery, if those who were, it was because of social contract, you know, because if I take this guy's wife, he'll kill me. Or if I take his wife, he'll take my wife. And it's just, you know, it's just better contract with society, everyone to stick with one mate, right? Or at least not take someone else's mate. But it wasn't viewed as anything holy and as a fusion and, you know, tremendous things that the tremendous kedusha that there is in marriage, you know, is mamish parallel to the cosmic fusion between body and soul, and in the bigger picture, between the whole hanhog of Horas Ponim and the hanhog of Hester Ponim, right? Okay. When Avram and Sarah come on the scene and they get declared Jewish, right? And that means that, you know, that's our unique legacy of Besoid Atem Kurim Adam, Vena Akum Kurim Adam. You're called Adam. The nation's world are not called Adam, right? That began a new destiny, right? And the Kedusha of the Guf was revealed, right? That just like now we were going to get 613 mitzvahs, right, to create a synthesis between our 248 organs, 365 sinews, with its spiritual counterparts that they're in the neshama, as we will learn, right? So when that destiny began, so now there's two things. Now the body is holy, or there is actually a secret sanctity, like we explained last week and the week before. There's a secret sanctity in the body that begins to come out, because we see how it, you know, the neshama needs it, and you know, it can do mitzvahs that the neshama can't do without it. Right, so we start seeing the sanctity of the body, and that's why the body deserves final respects. But before the coming of the Jewish people, which started with Avraham Avinu, the body is viewed as totally unholy. And parallel to that, marriage is just a pragmatic thing, pragmatic relation, pragmatic arrangement. Right? But now with the Kedusha that comes out with the Jewish people, which is the nation that seeks to fuse body and soul, right? So parallel to that, also the Kedusha of marriage emerges. And we start taking the marriages of our avos seriously, and we look at to, you know, what the Torah says about it for us to learn from. You know, there's divrei Torah in the marriage. It's not just a pragmatic thing. Now, on a deeper level, the hidden kedusha in commerce also comes out, right? Avraham buying the Maras HaMachpel, the Berisah, first recorded business deal in the Torah. The second one, to the best of my memory, is when Yaakov buys land from Shechem, right? But, you know, and for us, no, people must have been doing commerce, right? The Torah doesn't talk about it. Right? There's a certain, you know, koach in commerce that's parallel to what we're talking about, and we're going to discuss this more in detail next session. We've already gone over time. But let me just drop a hint. We know that kiddushin, marriage, is a kinyan, right? It's basic, you know, Meseches Kiddushin 101 that we learn in yeshivas. It's the very Beis Hamidav that's called kinyan, Haisha Niknes. It's an acquisition. Acquisition is to fuse things. You know, it's a legal action. But that legal action means this thing is now bonded to me. You're not allowed to take it away from me. It's mine, right? Which, you know, you might think is just, you know. But marriage is called kinyan, because initially, for the fusion to take place, it first happens on a legal, ideological level, that this is the commitment. We're bonded to each other, and when you follow through with that commitment, actually happens physically, and cosmically, you know, they fuse. But it starts with the commitment, with the ideological and legal bond is what, that's the initial glue that if you have a successful marriage, that glue gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and the fusion becomes more and more, right? You know, and in that way also, you know, there's a person could find purpose in his earthly pursuits if he is making acquisitions for the purpose of pulling pieces together, right? But it's a very deep idea. There's a cliffhanger, so tune in Thursday, you know, and we have to have a discussion whether I am expected to come into the White Shul moving forward. Because, like I said, tonight included, more times than not, this has been done exclusively by Zoom. So we have to ask ourselves whether, this is necessary, or this should be a Zoom, and, of course, recorded for those who missed the Zoom session only. All right, everyone, have a good evening. And if you, if you're hearing this recording, because you weren't at the here in person tonight, you know, the Zoom link is... is what we will stick with, but I please weigh in as to whether there's any point of me hauling myself in body, in goof, to the White Shul, you know, twice a week. Okay, everyone, have a good night.